As always, the Ira Kaufman Podcast is presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. It's clearance time at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. Save up to $13,000 on remaining 2017 Cadillacs, and for a limited time only, get 0% for 72 months on the powerful Cadillac Escalade. Plus, you get free car washes for life at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon on Causeway Boulevard. Visit EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. See the dealer for all the details. The offer expires at the end of the month, but they often hold over for days. So go to EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com for all the details. And at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, during Breast Cancer Awareness Month, they're holding their annual Drive for Hope event and supporting women in their brave fight by donating a portion of each sale to My Hope Chest. Great cause. You can visit them at myhopechest.org. Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa is a great supporter of the community and of My Hope Chest. So when you lease a 2017 ATS sedan for $329 a month, sign and drive, you're supporting a great cause. Visit EdMorseCadillacTampa.com for all the details or call 844-746-0513. Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher.
All right, Coach, you know, we give Ira a lot of crap here on the podcast. He says he knows you, he's your buddy, he loves you. You know, what can you say about Ira that you spent years around him as a journalist, as a guy?
Well, let me tell you this. He's got the greatest voice I ever heard. I can't imitate him well, but he's a friend of mine, and he's a guy I consider great at what he does because he does the work. And he watches practice. He takes pride in you know, getting the story correct, and he's just been loyal. I've always considered him a friend, and I consider him an expert when it comes to pro football.
I'm the demographic for X-Lax.
Happy Tuesday on the Ira Kaufman Podcast. We're live from the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway, the Den of Depression, Raymond James, whatever you want to call it. This is the Ira Kaufman Podcast, the Sage Podcast. I'm Steve Isbitz with Lee DeCamper. We're JoeBucksFan.com, and we're diving right into Ira here because, Ira, we don't always do this. We don't always record right after the game.
We don't need no All-22 tape to dissect that game, gentlemen. And we don't need a morning after to reflect on it, Lee. We all know what Buck fans experienced today. And by the way, there weren't all that many in the stands, let's be honest. The crowd, I thought, was a little disappointing. The weather wasn't terrible. Sun was shining. And after a performance like that, Lee, I don't know how many of you are going to come back for the Jets game.
Well, what I thought was odd, and people that follow Joe Bucks Fan on Twitter saw me type this out two or three times early in the game. I don't ever recall a crowd. I thought it was okay crowd. I'm not really hung up on crowds. It's 21st century.
But they weren't into the game, Lee.
Not only were they not into the game, I don't ever remember this crowd being this quiet. It was like a movie theater. Carolina had the ball. The Bucks are on defense. You could almost hear Cam Newton up in the press box calling snaps. Steve, it was so quiet.
It was a very, very quiet crowd out there, Steven. That's not good news for the Glazers.
The north end zone got a little crazy when they had a couple of stops over there. But in its entirety, the crowd was very, very weak. But Ira, your podcast is not weak, and it's heard on iTunes, Podbean, Google Play, right on JoeBucksFan.com, popping every Tuesday and Thursday. We appreciate the continued support of the podcast.
Our listenership keeps going up, Steven. Up.
Listeners keep going. Now, later in the podcast, Ira's got a special guest, a one-on-one, the rare one-on-one Ira conversation. I was listening in, Ira. It sounded a little bit like the old ESPN Sunday conversation.
It was very
high brow, high class.
And this guest has a tremendous perspective on Buck history.
Well, he is a Bucks historian.
He is a historian, no question about it. And you haven't mentioned his name, Steve.
No, it was a surprise.
A surprise. Right, well, it's probably in the headline of this podcast, but it's a surprise for now. We'll keep it a surprise. So, Ira, look, Bucks fans, they're in absolute shock. Let's just call it what it is. Yep.
I think I am.
This team is 2-5. 2 months ago, we're talking 10 wins. We're talking playoffs. I think even the biggest pessimist is thinking 8 wins for this team.
They open with an ass-kicking, Lee, and the Bears aren't that bad. Not as bad as we thought they were.
No, Bears aren't that bad. But even so, it was a very impressive coming off a hurricane mess of a distraction. Yeah. You know, people thought Hard Knocks was a distraction. A hurricane, that's a distraction when people are leaving town. But here we are, 2-5. And Ira, just the scope, Bucks fans want to hear your scope of the situation here. What the hell's going on right now?
Well, Lee, I'll tell you a phrase I don't want to hear anymore until they start doing it.
The wind?
Complimentary football. I hear it.
There's nothing complimentary about it.
I hear it from Dirk Cutter. I hear it from Todd Monken.
Jameis.
I might even hear it from a Glazer on occasion. We're not seeing it. Lee, we're not seeing it. Example, last week, They ravage a very good Bills defense that did a job on Oakland today. When Buffalo plays at home, they can shut you down. With Marcell Dareus or without Marcell Dareus. They didn't have him today, and they took care of the Raiders, who were coming off a big emotional win against the Chiefs. You figure Oakland turned their season around. No, they get hammered in Buffalo. But the Bucs put up 27 points. And I still can't believe when you do that, you walk out with a loss. That is shameful. You can't do that to Buffalo. Then they come in today, and the defense wasn't great, but it was good. It was good. They had 255 yards, Steve. Carolina, 255. I'll live with that every week. And Lee, the offense doesn't show up. The run game in the first halves every week, awful. Absolutely awful. I did a little original research just for you, Bizbits.
Uh-oh.
Here it is. First week of the season, Peyton Barber, 10 for 47.
Mm-hmm.
Six games have passed. Two carries.
Yeah, that's
inexplicable.
That's one of the great mysteries of this team, and frankly, Ira, I'm depressed. You got this offense with these weapons, and you could only get a field goal? It's not like Panthers or Chicago Bears of 85. There's no excuse for that, and I got to be fair, and I love the guy to death, Dirk Cutter, but we've been on JoeBucksFan.com, we've been pounding Mike. I mean, pounding Mike Smith. Good guy that he is, good man that he is, because his defenses this year have been worse than Lovey's, have been worse than Raheem's, and we had to apply the same type of critique against Mike Smith, and we hammered him, me specifically. I felt bad about it, but I had to be fair. If I did this to Lovey, I had to do it to Mike Smith. I got to do it to Dirk Cutter today.
And Steve, at the same time, like Lee's saying, we were saying Cutter's offense is coming around. You know, that's going to look good in the Cutter portfolio.
Ira, we weren't just saying it. It was happening. It was real. We weren't just throwing crap out there. It was coming around. And here's the thing, and you've coined this yourself, Ira. This, I think, goes to the greater scope of the state of the Bucs, which I want you to address as you finish your coffee. Here's the thing. The Buccaneers on defense, we could argue all night if we wanted to about whether they have the personnel. You've brought this up before. Do they have the personnel? Well, on offense, they have the personnel. There's no argument. Sure, they don't have a dynamic running back, but they have enough personnel to score points. So how do you throw 3 points out there and not blame the play caller and say, what the hell are you douing, Dirk?
What am I going to pin this all on Luke Kuechly coming back? You know, he's a heck of a player.
Who was a monster today.
He's a heck of a player.
He's a heck of a player.
Beautiful interception, read the play.
Ran down O.J. Howard one time from behind.
Yeah, he's a great player.
Oh, he's incredible.
No question about it. Look, Steve, your point is well taken. You're home. They've played pretty well at home this year, Lee. We know, you know, they haven't shown up on the road. I mean, that's documented. But at home, they've been presentable, even mm-hmm. against New England in the loss. And I think they had won 5 in a row before the New England game, you know, at home. So you figure, all right, division play starts. They'll take care of Carolina. And they throw out the clinker, an absolute clinker. And the one phrase that kept coming to my mind during the entire first half, mm-hmm. from the start to the finish, and it didn't get much better in the second half, was drab. Drab, Steve. And if the fans need a reason to get excited, they didn't give them any, Lee. They didn't give them one reason to get excited. Steve, the offense was awful today. That one is on Dirk Cutter.
Ira, being the wordsmith you are, I just got to say this. I don't think there were 10 other people in this stadium today that thought the word drab came to mind when they saw the Bucs. Maybe some other four-letter words, but not drab.
Lee, this one's on Cutter, Lee.
Absolutely.
Does that make Dirk a drab queen?
That crossed my mind too. I was like, "How am I going to work that in? I better not try."
Almost knocked over my coffee on that one.
You gotta ask.
Cutter looked very subdued.
Well, he should be. I mean, Steve told me this. I think we even talked about it on the podcast. Steve and I certainly talked about this off the podcast. Steve's like, "You got number one passing attack in the NFL. Your job is safe. It's the defensive coordinator's in trouble or other coaches." And I was 99% ready to buy into that after today. You have to wonder. I mean, they're not playing the 85 Bears. They're not playing the 2002 Buccaneers. They're playing the Panthers, which is an okay defense. Just okay. Nothing earth-shattering. And with those weapons, 3 points? Come on.
Steve, tell me if this is being simplistic, which I am on occasion, simplistic. And I'm sure you don't need any prodding to tell me I'm way off base, Kaufman. When you start writing stuff down, I get nervous. Lee, tell me if I'm wrong. Jameis Winston's not having a very good season. Can I put it any more bluntly than that?
And you are wrong. You are wrong. He's having. I'll give you this. He's having an erratic season. I checked stats Friday night or Saturday night. He was one, I think, number 11 in passing yards. He was having a decent season coming off that Buffalo game.
Oh, I don't want to hear about passing yards. The guy's throwing a lot of footballs.
Up until today, he cut down on his turnovers significantly from last year. But today was, no question about it, bad Jameis. And as much as we got a hammer cutter for having, whether they weren't ready, the play calls were bad, whatever, Jameis stunk the joint up today. Sorry, he did.
I'm gonna fall in the middle here, because let's say the Bucs are 2-5, and we'll say Jameis has played 6 games because he got hurt early in Arizona. We won't put any of that on Jameis. So the Bucs have played 6 games. I'll say Jameis has had 2 clunkers.
They don't score a lot of touchdowns, Steve. Facts are facts.
Jameis has 2 clunkers, and they got 2 wins, and you know he's probably been, I'd say he's got 2 clunkers, a few good games, 1 eh. And, you know, so he's been erratic. I don't think he's been bad.
Don't we
Dirk Cutter,
more in year 3?
Yes, we do.
Yes.
And Dirk Cutter keeps saying, and he said it on his radio show Friday, this is Jameis's best season. He's playing great football. I get where Cutter's coming from.
I thought he was outstanding in Buffalo. I will say that. He was outstanding.
I get where Cutter's coming from, but the point is, as we talked about all offseason, all our listeners heard us say this, for the Bucs to be successful, Jameis needs to not be the 4th best quarterback in this division.
That's a heck of a way to put it,
the
Steve.
Standard is higher, and today he was outplayed by Cam Newton. Next week's Drew Brees, Matt Ryan's around the corner. If he's 4th best, they will never win the division. So he's got to get better. However you think he's playing, he's got to get better.
Because they're not better in other positions than these. Maybe their defense is better in New Orleans. Maybe.
No.
You know, maybe. This year.
You know, they have better linebackers probably than New Orleans. But that's not a defense. It's just a unit. There are some areas that are better than the Saints. But as Steve said, he's been talking about this for almost years. Jameis cannot be the number 4 best quarterback.
All right, now let me.
The Saints are 5-2. Why do you hate the Saints so much?
I don't hate the
Come
Saints.
On, it's a good team.
They're going to be 4 games up on the Bucs by next Sunday evening.
Do you still think they're a mirage?
No, I think they're.
They won 5 in a row, Kaufman.
I think they're a 9 or 10 win team.
Okay,
now let me put DeKemper on the spot here, Steven. I know you won't mind that. Now, Lee, your favorite punching bag, and everybody knows
Chucky
it,
Sims.
Our readers and the listeners, I'll say this, Lee, you got to be fair, and you are fair.
I'll try.
The first half, there were no holes for Doug Martin. The guy's getting hit in the backfield, Steve. I mean, play after play, where are the holes? This is not a good run-blocking unit, Lee. The facts are the facts. 2 years in a row, that's not good enough. And you could start with Donovan Smith and go down the line. But you could start with the left tackle, who's not doing a good job on run blocking. He's not sealing off the spot.
Today, Donovan Smith had a bad game, no question.
I still think it's the absence of a dynamic running back. Ari, you stick a dynamic running back behind this unit, all of a sudden they look a lot better, I guarantee you.
And
that.
I give you the opposite. Open up enough holes and Lamar Miller gets 1,100 yards.
Well, I'll go back to what I think it was our last podcast that we talked about.
We both might be right on that.
There are offensive lines that are terrible, yet they have rushing attacks.
You know, Seattle's Chris Ivory gets 1,000 yards if he's got a good line in front of him. That's what happens.
I'm much more in the boat with Steve. You know, everybody wants Doug Martin to be that running
Can't
back.
Can't you ever agree with me, DeKemper?
I agree with you, but we're halfway through the season already. This will be season number 4 that Doug Martin has stunk out of 6 seasons. I mean, when are people going to come to the realization, you know, Doug Martin, if he has a good season, it's an anomaly.
He got every first half carry today. Every one of them.
Now, you want to be there for...
Why? Well, he was ineffective.
You want to be fair about Doug Martin, I'll be fair. Now, he's a lot better pass receiver this year than he has been a runner.
Drops.
I'm not saying the guys like Barry Sanders or Marshall Faulk. I'm saying he's a better pass receiver this year than he has been as a runner. He's made some good catches, made some good yak after the catches, but his running attack is just...
Well, he's not getting paid to be Charles Sims. He's getting paid to tote the rock.
And, well, you know, that's not my problem. I didn't sign the check.
All right, let's play along with your premise here, because you're frustrated with
I don't like the run blocking.
You don't like the run blocking. Okay, well, let's just play along with your premise, which is interesting.
I don't think they're physical
interesting.
Enough. I don't see the physicality.
Okay, no sweezy, okay. No Marpet.
All right, so let's go along with that premise, right? So here we are. Jason Light basically made no changes on the O-line this offseason.
And they've been healthy.
He decided, okay, Sweezy's coming back. That's my upgrade. I'm shifting over Marpet. That's a smart move. Everybody's back. Everybody's healthy, which you've said before. So it's no good. So is this a fireable offense for Jason Light?
Well, I don't think it looks good because I don't think the run blocking was very good in 2016.
So you're saying he hasn't built a good run blocking line?
Well, I don't know. In 2015, when Cutter was only calling plays and wasn't dealing with administrative duties, they set a franchise record for offense and had a heck of a running game and a lot of balance.
So do we bring
now Cutter's the head coach, and for 2 years, the running game's gone to hell.
So do we bring Lovey back as a consultant to calm down Cutter and help us play call?
I don't know what the answer is. Maybe Cutter's got to get more hands-on with this offense, but I'm telling you, they haven't run the ball worth a damn in about 2 years.
Well, I'm going to go old school NFL here. Cite Michael Lombardi, who was a Belichick and Al Davis disciple, and Pat Kerwin, who we all know and love. And both these guys have on different occasions have basically said, you can't have a soft training camp if you want a physical team.
Interesting.
And Cutter...
We thought Cutter was going to run a very physical training camp after the hard knocks and make sure it's not going to be a distraction and let's get back to football. And I didn't see it, Lee.
He had a soft training camp. And he always says, well, I got this from Jack Del Rio that, you got to keep your players healthy. You got to. Well,
who the hell's Jack Del Rio?
Thank you.
How
Who's Jack Del
got?
Rio?
I got to disagree with you guys on that one because of the first week results. He was kind of soft last year. They go out and punched Atlanta in the mouth. So they obviously were prepared and ready to go against a good football team.
They're also 3-5, and now they might be 2-6.
This year, they were ready for opening day again this year. It's dicey.
You're not wrong, but that beatdown out of Atlanta in Atlanta was really more passing game. Martin didn't run that much that I remember. It wasn't, like handed off to Doug Martin 25 times.
And your favorite player made the play of the game.
He makes 3 plays a year. We're talking about a running attack. It's got to be physical. You can't finesse a running attack.
Yeah, defense played well there too. But I'm not disagreeing with you. Look, as I've told you guys all spring, and you laughed at me, Ira. You laughed. Everybody heard you. I told you Doug Marrone would be a coach of the year candidate. You're laughing at me. Doug Marrone.
Well, he's subjective because he likes that. What's his face?
What did Marrone and Coughlin do this summer? They made a commitment to have the hardest training camp in the league.
And all I heard was how the Bucks kicked their ass during the scrimmages and the Jags looked terrible in the exhibition game.
Yep.
And Marrone looks lost. He looks lost.
And he had them in pads all every day, grinding them into the dirt. And then they come out and they're nasty.
And they got a heck of a defense.
And they're running the ball.
And they're running the football.
Calais Campbell? No. Chris Long? No. Can't have him. What's the Julius Peppers? Nah. We got Jackie Smith.
Steve, I went in the dressing room today, just like you guys did.
Locker room?
At locker room. Locker room. Yeah, I mean, this is not the fashion police we went in afterwards. and they don't have any answers, Steve. And can you blame them? I mean, I'm looking at DeMar Dotson. I'm looking at Brait. I'm looking at McDonald. All my go-to guys, they're staring at the floor. They're looking, they're in disbelief.
Marpette was angry.
Steve, nobody saw this coming. Nobody saw this coming. They could leave the Big Easy on a 5-game losing streak.
You're darn right they could.
Quote of the day, which is in.
Meanwhile, I'm talking about 5-game winning streaks. Unbelievable.
Quote of the day, I thought, was from Mike Evans. It's in one of my stories on JoeBucksFan.com.
One of your 11 stories.
From Sunday. Hit the next page button. You'll find it. Mike Evans said, we look like a great team on paper, but we're just not as good as we thought we were. That sort of says it all.
It's hard to top that.
I can go ahead and say this now. I was going to write it up. I didn't write it up because it's borderline hearsay. But apparently the fans have really turned on this team, at least the drunks that stuck around. And I hope I'm not disparaging anybody. But if you stayed through the bitter end of this game, I hope you were drunk because it was bad. But anyway, apparently the fans were really chewing out the players as they were coming in the tunnel, really jumped. I heard this from two or three people that were witnesses. I did not witness it, so it's secondhand.
That's beer talking, though, Lee. It's mostly beers.
Well, it was our comrades here in the Penn and Mike Club, and we can't drink during games. But anyway, guys I respect, guys that I saw, guys that I trust. Apparently, fans were chewing everybody out, all the players, all the foul names you could think of. And I guess at one point, It even got Ali Marpet's attention. He kind of turned around like, whoa. Not that he was going to go after a fan or anything, but he couldn't believe what he was hearing.
He downplayed it in the locker room.
Oh, he said it didn't happen. On the record, he said it didn't happen. I was there with the scrum, and he said nothing happened.
Nobody wants to be disrespected. Nobody wants to be belittled.
Yeah, I heard Mike Evans.
In the heat of the game as you're walking off the field.
I heard Mike Evans got so hacked off, he rifled his pair of gloves up against the tunnel wall as he was coming in. I heard Doug Martin also turned around and kind of like, what are you saying or something. Again, they weren't going after the fans. They just couldn't believe what they were hearing. They're like, heard something so harsh. They're like, what?
Steve, these are the diehards that believe that one of these years this franchise is going to turn it around, and they thought this is the year. Now, maybe the three of us led them to that belief, but I firmly believe the Bucks were going to have a good season.
Perhaps they just realized they spent $70 on six beers.
And saw a field goal.
Again, this was a game that had no entertainment value. I don't think we can skip over that.
Bad football. But very seriously, because fans are really hurting today. There's a lot of pain across Buccaneers fandom, a lot of disbelief. Is this team, do you believe this team is on a horrible downward spiral? Is something out of control here, or is it just a football season playing out where the team wins 6-7 games, or is something much worse going on?
I think in the second half of the season, Lee, they'll upset a couple of teams that you don't think they're going to beat, but when the smoke clears, Lee, it's going to be a bad season for the Bucks.
Well, after today's game, you're looking at a top 6 pick in a draft. You're looking at a 4-12 team.
Who the heck wants fans looking at the NFL draft in midseason?
They're used to it.
That's the kiss of death.
Well, it's a long-standing Halloween tradition in Tampa. occasionally it falls off the wagon, but that's sort of where we are right now in a mindset. But seriously, Ira, I don't know how much you can reveal. I have to say I left Dirk Cutter's news conference and was pretty much, Jameis's news conference, walking in the tunnel. I turn to my right. I see Mike Smith. I turn a little bit farther. There's a little guy cornering him. It's Ira Kaufman. You guys were
burrowing into like a mollusk
against a cement wall. You had him. where this is a place where nobody is. I don't know what can you share from your conversation.
Well, he came over and he vented his frustrations, and he's the type of guy. I was telling Lee this that even though his particular group played admirably today, a loss is a loss, Lee. And I don't think he's looking at it necessarily through the prism of, hey, my guy's got the job done. It's like, we didn't get the job done. He's probably thinking they needed a couple more takeaways. Set the Bucks up on a short field because the offense was struggling. He said, I'm going home to have a miserable evening. I said, are you going to watch the Sunday night game? No, I am not. Are you going to watch the World Series? No, I am not. Wow. I said, what are you going to do, Mike? He goes, well, I got my mother here. She's staying with us for another day or two. I'll have dinner with her and try to decompose. But
you mean decompress?
Make it decompress. Fix that up over there.
That's got to stay in.
But decompose. What is he, a skeleton? But Steve, you used the word shock. I don't think that's a stretch, Lee.
With Mike Smith?
Everybody. Huh. Everybody in that room is in shock. They don't have any answers. Cutter looked stone faced at the podium. I asked him directly. You have a sense that the season's slipping away. Brusquely, he answered quickly, no.
Brusquely.
And turned to the next question, Lee, which was probably about why he talked to Sirius on Friday night and gave them more information than he gave the local reporters here during the week.
Well, that
was a big topic during the post-game discussion.
For two people. Right after you talked to Mike Smith, I felt it behooved me to go talk to him because, as I stated earlier in this podcast, I've been very harsh on him. And I've always been of the belief that positive or negative, you show your face.
And you know he's a decent man.
He's a good man. He's a good man. I get no joy writing about how rotten his defenses have been this season. I get no joy out of it. It pains me. But Mike Smith, some of his defenses, some of the games they've had have been worse. I have to be consistent. Anyway, I felt it behooved me to go talk to him. And what Ira was saying was like, I told him, hey, man, your defense really played good today. Loss wasn't on you. Loss wasn't on your game plan. Loss wasn't on your players. He was appreciative that I said that, but he wanted nothing of it. He was, like the life was sucked out of him. He was really upset about the loss. He really
and
was.
And he's very loyal to Cutter. You know, they got a very strong relationship.
Sure, I mean, you know.
And he sees what Cutter's going through.
And they've also been through tremendous highs and lows of seasons before. Great seasons followed by bad seasons. He's been through a lot. Does it surprise you, Ira, that the Bucks third down defense again today? Panthers, 8 of 17 on third down.
Last week was 10 of 16.
They were better today, but the money down, they're not delivering.
Steve, if you look in the back of the sheets, they have the season stats. I took a quick glance at it. Lee, for the season, third downs, 49%.
Yep. As Tom Lang on the Scuttlebucks podcast said, it's a coin flip.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
That's a 5-11 statistic.
So, I mean, on third down, they were where they were all year today.
Coin flip.
Not good enough.
And they lose the time of possession because of that. Every week, they lose the time of possession.
Well, that's part of the reason why Carolina got back into the game late, because of time of possession, because the offense wasn't doing a darn thing, and as good as the defense played through 3.5 quarters, they finally buckled at the end and gave up another touchdown.
No sacks again, Steve? No sacks?
Not even that.
Ira, not even no sacks. Not one quarterback hit was registered. As I wrote, the next one of these days, a Bucks opponent, opposing quarterback, is going to come out and play in a Speedo. Why do you need what do you need the pads for?
By the way, Ira, there was an accomplishment in the first half. I saw it with my own eyes. Robert Ayers actually came within 5 feet of Cam Newton in the pocket.
There you go. Baker wasn't terrible today.
No.
Steve.
Go watch the film, Ira.
Oh.
Go watch the film.
Well, it wasn't like Carolina ran the ball up and down the field.
Watch the film.
All right.
It's going to be
you won't go swaggy any break.
Just go watch it, Ira. Go watch it. If you go look at the snap counts, which are already out, he probably didn't play half the game again. So for a guy who was allegedly playing well early, they surely didn't stick with him. But he's sucking. His hands are on his hips after two snaps for the rest of the game. He's getting bowled over big time. Go look at Cam Newton's the quarterback sneak when he converted, so effortlessly on third and one. Everybody knew what was coming. Baker got pancaked one of two times in this game that he got pancaked. I'm over Chris Baker.
Wait. Ira, I'm willing to buy you a Riesling.
Go ahead.
On this.
I'm all ears.
TJ Ward and Swaggy Baker will not be on his roster come March.
That's a pretty good bet. Now, guys, let me throw this out at you, too. Can Winston hit a couple of deep balls?
I don't think so. He had a home run shot to Mike Evans.
There's Mike Evans going down the right sideline, Lee.
DeSean Jackson is open again. The targets on Jackson, I believe, I don't have it in front of me, but I think he hit Jackson 3 times on 8 targets.
Same thing with Evans.
I mean, that's not why you're paying a guy $11 million. All right, Ira, though, Dirk Cutter went there, so we have to go there. The wind, windy day, maybe 20, 25 mile an hour wind swirling around. Cutter actually blamed the wind for some of Jameis Winston's inaccuracy. What's your sage thought on that?
First of all, half the game you got the wind at your back. I don't want to hear any nonsense, including the overthrow to Mike Evans. That was going towards the south.
Unless he's blaming that on the wind.
Well, look, to me, that sounds like an excuse. And Cutter's not big on excuses, but I thought that was an excuse.
Was Cam Newton
playing? Jameis Winston did not have a good day on Sunday. End of story.
Was Cam Newton somehow playing in a bubble?
And again, who shows up every week? Cameron Brate. Every freaking week, the guy shows up. When he drops a ball, the three of us look at each other. Did Brate really drop that ball? Am I right? Besides the one game against New England, he's been outstanding.
Yeah. 4 catches for Brate on 5 targets, and the 1 target was picked. Third down, Luke Kuechly.
Excellent play by Kuechly.
Kuechly seemed to know that on third and long, they were going to Cameron Brate. What do you know?
Mike Tanner of Bleacher Report. Mike's a good guy. I've known Mike for a few years. He said when it's third down and medium, you can bank. Jameis is going to break. You can bank
on it. The Bucks have to self-scout about that, Lee. They got to self-scout that. Other teams are looking at that.
All right, Sage, 2 quick questions before we get to your special guest, who is a longtime Tampa Tribune reporter, columnist, beat writer. He's done a lot at the Tribune over the years, many years. Joey Johnston, he also penned a book about the Buccaneers.
And now he's a sideline reporter, Steve, for USF football, traveling with the team.
He is. You can Google Joey Johnston. Joey Johnston, if you don't know who
with
he
a
is.
T.
A lot of sage experience. I'm not going to give him the sage wisdom that I give you, assigned
sage
to you,
experience.
Ira. Sage experience, sage insight into this organization. Nice little one-on-one Ira chat and their little bubble that they got into their cone of silence.
All right, what do you got for me, Stevie?
All right, 2 quick ones, Ira. Hot topic among Bucks fans, Gerald McCoy. Is he making guys better around him? And he was invisible on the O-line today. And the Panthers had a backup center in there. And their guard, Trey Turner, came into the game banged up, and he left the game injured.
So Khalil didn't play. That's a big loss for the Panthers.
So what's going on with McCoy?
Well, Lee, you know, the McCoy supporters will say he's double-teamed on every play. Lee, that's what happens to elite. If you're an elite defensive tackle, that's what's going to happen. This is no surprise to Gerald McCoy. Now, McCoy's the guy who in OTAs, or was a training, I think it was OTAs, came in and talked about that Pro Bowl experience and how three guys that he respected, that shall go unnamed, said, you're not doing enough, Gerald. You got to be stronger and lead the way, and you got to up your play. He hasn't upped his play. He's not having a bad season, Lee, but he hasn't upped his play.
What do you make of the remarks that Sapp had, that he was being misused, thus the results aren't there?
I think Sapp's pretty close to McCoy. I think McCoy leans on him as a mentor, and I think Sapp's returning the favor. I don't think McCoy bristled last week. It's all in the way he said it. He was asked a direct question.
About the three-man line? I got the impression he bristled.
He was asked a direct question. It's not the first time he said that, Steve, that he says, I do what I'm told. That's a classic line by McCoy.
That's a loaded line, too.
And it's a loaded line. There's a lot of interpretation there. There's a lot of room for interpretation. He's not the main culprit, Steve, by a long shot on this team. But I'll tell you what, it wouldn't surprise me if he doesn't make the Pro Bowl this year. It wouldn't surprise me one bit.
And he started out so well, and he's just fallen off the map the last couple of weeks.
I thought this was his worst game. I really, really do. I know they tightened up against the run significantly, but I just don't think this was his game today.
He usually gets two or three quarterback hits.
Didn't he have a sack or he had a tackle for loss today? Something. Some play sticks out to me. I don't know what it was.
Yeah, he had one late. It was later in the game, you know, sort of I think it was tackle.
Steve, zero across the board quarterback hits. I mean, that lies right at McCoy's doorstep.
That lies at Jason Light's doorstep. Come on. I mean, that's just brutal. That's hard to do.
It wasn't like he only threw 18 balls today.
32 dropbacks, you don't hit him once? That
screams out.
Unthinkable. You could get lucky. You know
that movie series Scream 1, Scream 2?
I never saw them.
That's Scream 3 right there.
Well, I'll just say this. I may have said this before. I think the world of Jason Light. I think he should return. He's made mistakes. It's a position you're going to make mistakes. He's done more good than bad. But my two main issues with Jason the last 2 years, one of which you can make a direct argument, cost him a playoff berth. Jason banks on guys that are injury prone or have injury histories. And, oh, by the way, they get injured. And last year, there were three guys that were out on the market. Steve always talks about Calais Campbell. Yes, he's correct. There was also a guy by the name of Julius Peppers. There was also a guy named Chris Long. And for whatever reason, Jason, we don't need him. We got Jackie Smith. Jackie Smith is on the employment line again. He got cut by the Lions last week. Of course, Noah with his bum shoulder. The year previously, they were banking on Lewis Murphy coming off surgery.
George Johnson.
Sackless. But last year, Lewis Murphy, they're banking on him coming back off of surgery. He never did come back. Vincent Jackson, was 34 years old at the time with a bum knee? Guess what happened? He ended his career with a bad knee. Jason's got to quit banking on guys with injuries.
What else you got, Stevie?
Last one, and probably something we can look at in the next podcast, just on Lee's front. Kendall Beckwith had a hell of a start. He's really disappeared.
There's book out on him now, probably.
I understand he's moved positions around with the other linebackers coming back, but hopefully he sort of gets past this.
You're right. I haven't noticed him the last 2 weeks.
Mini wall that he's hit.
Yeah, a little wall.
You've been around for 73 years in the locker rooms. All right, I gotta say,
I don't even respond.
He doesn't even respond. While you were grilling Clinton McDonald at his locker today, and things were thinning out,
can I talk to a Buck player without you gawking at me?
I have to listen.
Why do you see everything?
I gotta see where you're going.
It's unbelievable.
Well, in the locker room, now this is maybe 15, 20 minutes after the game, easy 25 minutes after the game, before Jameis goes to his press conference. Dirk Koetter walks over to Jameis's locker.
I saw that.
And talked to him one-on-one at his locker for probably 4 minutes.
I did see that.
Now,
I walked away to give him some privacy.
When's the last time you saw a head coach go into a post-game locker room after he's already addressed the team and everything and go talk to a player for a while at his locker? I haven't seen that ever.
You wonder if he was trying to shape what Winston was going to say at the podium, perhaps?
Was that before he went to the podium?
I believe
yes.
it was.
Yes,
Lou. Also, Steve, it could be a case of Cutter already knew that Winston was taking the brunt of the loss on his own
which
shoulders.
Which he tends to do.
Which he tends to do, and he wanted to give him a little pat on the shoulder and say we're all in this together, which I'm sure he did. But you're right, I did notice that too, because when I saw Cutter, I was going to go up to him. He had already spoke at the podium, and then I saw he made a beeline for Winston's locker, and I walked away.
Sort of touched upon this from a media aspect, but not the meat of the issue. James apparently re-injured that shoulder up in Buffalo. Cutter mentioned today he took a hit in the fourth quarter where he thought James was going to come out. You're 2-5. Playoffs is a pipe dream. We're talking about the franchise here. Does Cutter do the right thing and sit him? Do the Glazers make a phone call? Does Jason Light make a phone call? Tell Cutter to sit him? What do you think? What should they do?
I think the New Orleans game will be the difference maker. If they go to 2-6, and believe me, the Saints will be heavy favorites on Sunday. At least 7 points, if not more. Steve, if they go to 2-6, there could be some pressure to sit Winston, maybe for an extended period. What's the point at that point?
Well, look what Andrew Luck's
going through. Maybe they feel there's one more shot. Beat the division leader on the road with Winston. Outscore Breeze, which is the only way you're going to do it. You're not going to beat them 16-13 in the Superdome. We all know that. This might be Winston's last shot for a while.
I don't know. It's very much a medical thing. And we could sit here and play doctor all day long. But if the doctor said, yeah, if he's bruised and it's just a pain thing, if he can tolerate it, that's fine. He's not going to get worse.
It's not my sense that Cutter and Light are going to give up on this season very easily.
No, Lee. No. I mean, he's paid to play football. And if the doctor says he's not going to do any damage, you know, I don't have a problem with it. But that's just me. But eventually, long term, something might go down if they believe they're done.
Yeah, the cloud of Andrew Luck is hovering over the NFL.
You know, you always got that question. Can he hurt it even worse with another hit? That's a big question.
That's what the doctors are for, Sage. So get to the doctor, check your blood pressure.
Right,
we'll
buddy.
See you on Thursday. Hey, don't you dare go anywhere. Right now, it's Ira with Joey Johnston, the interview we promised. Enjoy.
We have a special guest, the emeritus Joey Johnston, who's watched more Buck football than anybody I know and has some tremendous historical perspective. Joey, welcome.
Thank you, Ira. Great to be here. I've heard good things about the podcast. Very honored to be on it.
Thank you, my friend. Joey, I dare say, I don't think it's presumptuous to say a lot of Buck fans are in a frenzy right now. You know, they might have shown a little of their emotions after the game, hanging over the rail, as frustrated fans do. Are they justified in their frustration over this football team, or is it a case of not enough talent?
I don't think it's a case of not enough talent, but I do think it's the bleakest time of the Jameis Winston era, for sure. They're on a four-game losing streak. They just lost 17-3 at home to the Carolina Panthers in what could only be described as a very uninspiring performance. So, yeah, where do you go from here? How do you get better? I think the interesting thing is they have moved the ball very well in previous weeks. Today they did not. Today the defense played much better, but the offense couldn't contribute. So clearly they need to put both sides of the ball together along with the special teams, and that's not something they've been able to do. They go to New Orleans, and they've got to get much better on both sides of the ball. They've got to put it together. Today is a day to forget. I don't think this will live in the annals of time by any means. This was a pretty bleak, difficult game to watch.
Joey, I asked Coach Cutter in the post game, and I put it as directly as I could. Coach, do you feel the season slipping away? He answered immediately, no, absolutely not, and turned to face the next question. Was that a fair question, Joey?
Oh, yeah, sure. It's a fair question because you look at the way the team's trending with four straight losses. I mean, yeah, you can come back from 2-5. Teams have done it before. They were 3-5 at the midway point last year and almost got into the playoffs. But what we saw on the field today, especially offensively, doesn't give you a lot of optimism. They've got to turn that around. They've got to run the ball more consistently. They've got to stay away from turnovers, and they've got to get the ball in the end zone. I mean, this was the first time since Jameis Winston has been here, and that's 39 games, all starts by Jameis. The first time since he's been here that they haven't scored a touchdown in a game. So that's not what you want to see. I mean, with the weapons they have at receiver, with Doug Martin and with Jameis, you've got to score points. You've got to score touchdowns, and they didn't score one. Now, granted, the Carolina Panthers have a pretty good defense. They put a lot of pressure on Jameis. But still, they had opportunities, and every time they did, they gave the ball away. So that's got to get a lot better.
Joey, what's the message to fans who are now starting to question Jameis Winston going forward? Is he the franchise quarterback that he was lauded to be, or is that a lot of rubbish right now?
I don't think you give up on Jameis Winston by any means. I mean, this was not a very good game by him, and he admitted it. He apologized to the fans afterwards. I mean, he took it head on. He took ownership of it, took responsibility for it. He said, I just didn't have a good performance, and I don't think anybody would disagree with that. They've got to find a way to utilize the weapons they have. Obviously, DeSean Jackson hasn't taken off like many thought he would. Mike Evans has had some drops. He's got some good games, but he's had some drops. O.J. Howard only had two catches. He was emerging into a much better weapon, but he didn't really figure into the plan too much.
And the run game hasn't been very efficient, Joey. It just hasn't.
No, they rushed for 85 yards. I mean, that's not good for any NFL team. Granted, they only ran the ball 22 times. They were forced into passing the ball more, but they just never got the rhythm. The very few times that they did, there was a turnover. There was Jameis Winston fumbled the ball. He threw an interception. They were hampered by a very, very difficult field position through the game. Five of their drives started inside the 20. I think three of them started inside the 10. So they were looking at a long field most of the day. They didn't have many good opportunities. But again, when they did, they gave the ball up. And Carolina didn't have a lot of opportunities either. But when it did, it cashed in. And that was really about it. The Tampa Bay defense played pretty well other than that. Chris Conte had an interception.
Oh, yeah. That's right. That's
but,
right.
Again, it didn't really figure in the outcome. It wasn't any kind of crucial or pivotal play by any means. It was a great interception, a tremendous individual diving play, one of the highlights of the day individually for the Bucs, for sure. But, again, it was a non-entertaining, defensive-minded game where there were just a couple of slivers of chances, and Carolina took advantage of theirs, and the Bucs did not, and that was that. You don't see many 17-3 scores in the NFL, but today we did, and Carolina got out of here. They're 5-3. They're going to play Atlanta. They're feeling good about themselves. The Bucs are 2-5, and they can't be feeling good about themselves.
Joey, looking at the division, it's just shocking to me. I really have a hard time grasping this, but Joey, the first week was a trouncing of a Bears team that I don't think is quite as bad as people thought they would be. They seem to be pretty competitive, especially at home. But even today, they were competitive against New Orleans. Joey, since then, if they go into the Superdome and they'll be heavily underdogs and lose, Joey, they will be four games out of first place at the midway point of the season. Firmly looking up at two other teams in your division. Just very hard to believe that this could all happen in a short period of time. Could go this south.
You know, part of it, I think, is the schedule is very front-loaded with road games and some really tough opponents. Playing the Patriots, the Cardinals on the road. You know, these things even out. I mean, they do have a pretty good home schedule
and
in Buffalo's December.
Buffalo's a pretty good team.
Buffalo,
Joe,
is a good team on the road. So they've had some tough sledding. That's not to excuse their record. You know, it's been a little bit difficult. They've come close, but they haven't done enough. But today was just one of those games where almost from the get-go, you didn't have a good feeling about it. It just never was going to be a good result. So that's the discouraging part of today, is there was never any time where the crowd got into it. It was a very, very quiet crowd and a very, very quiet day, other than maybe the cat calls.
Joey, I'm going to ask you for a little conjecture. I know you don't like to do it, but it's on the minds of fans. Joey, the Glazers watched this game from the suite. I might mention Man U had a huge win on Saturday against Tottenham. So they were in a good mood, you know, and here come the Panthers, who were not playing particularly well coming into today's game. Keekly was coming back from a concussion. You know, middle of the fourth quarter, drab performance, no excitement. Not a big crowd. What has to be going through the mind of the Glazers at that point? Is Brian turning to Joey and saying, what are we going to do about this?
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if they were kicking some things around, because they tend to look at how things are trending, and they're not trending well. They're pretty good about knowing that any one game or two games can be good or bad, and you move on from them. But I think they're looking at the totality of it. And again, there were some expectations. I don't know how many of them were realistic, but the Bucs finished fast last year.
I believe the Glazers shared some of those expectations.
Well, the Bucs were perceived to be a team that was on the rise, a team that either should be in the playoffs or would be in the playoffs. And obviously, the Hard Knocks thing, fueled those. It made the Bucs into a glamorous marquee kind of franchise for the nation to see. Rising quarterback and DeSean Jackson and some other bells and whistles. And it's pretty much fallen flat since then. But you know, you can't excuse the performance on the field. It's been pretty putrid at times, especially on the road. And today was one of the more forgettable home games in recent memory for me, for sure.
What year did this remind you of a Bucks game, Joseph? 86 or something?
Yeah, 86 or maybe even – this was the kind of game you would see in the first couple of years of the franchise when they had trouble moving the ball. That's probably a better comparison. I mean, the first couple of years, especially 77 when they hadn't won a game.
But the defense was decent.
The defense
right?
was decent. Even so, you knew there was no chance they were going to win because as good as the defense was, the offense was equally as bad. They couldn't move the ball. So the best the Bucks could do in those days was like a 10-0 loss, and that was pretty much a moral victory at that time. Today was a similar sensation where it just seemed like no matter what the Bucks tried, nothing was going to work.
Joey, last question. Towards the end of seasons that don't go well, Joey, you often hear, even in the media, a discussion, well, maybe the talent was overrated from the start. I think the Lightning went through that last year when they didn't make the playoffs towards the end. Maybe they weren't that talented. I think a lot of times, Joey, that's a way just to get the coaching staff off the hook a lot of times. Joey, if that discussion is happening and the Bucks are 4-9, where would you land in that debate? Maybe there's a couple of positions where they are a little short in talent.
Well, the pass rush continues to be just a puzzle. I mean, they just cannot get any sacks or pressure appreciably on the quarterback, and that's a major, major problem. It's a major problem today. They have 7 sacks in 7 games. They're last in the league.
Scheme or talent, Joseph?
I think both, partially, and I know the players are chirping about the scheme and not putting enough pressure up front. You know, maybe there's something to that. I don't know. But
I don't see the bodies at defensive end, Joey. I don't
well,
see
Well, you know, they've gone through a lot of poor decisions up front with draft, bringing guys in. So, yeah, they just have not been able to – it's been their Achilles heel for what seems like a decade or more. So they've got to get that straightened out. Have my doubts on the offensive line about their ability to protect and play as a unit. But I got to admit, I was certainly anticipating some major things from Mike Evans and DeSean Jackson and Doug Martin and Jameis Winston and O.J. Howard. I really thought, my gosh, okay, this is going to be a difficult team to hold down. Didn't have any trouble holding them down today, that's for sure. The Panthers didn't.
And you thought they'd be a fun team, Joey, to watch.
Absolutely.
And we didn't see that today.
And they've shown signs of that. They've had some games where they were fun to watch. Today was not fun to watch by any means. I do think there is talent on the offensive side of the ball. Whether it's on the defensive side of the ball, whether it's injuries, or they've had a lot, or personnel, I think they're kind of chasing their tail right now. It's not a championship defense. I thought there were the elements on the offensive side of the ball. I still kind of do, but as the season moves on, you have to be shown some things, and so far you haven't been shown them.
Joey, last question. Thanks for your help today. Much appreciated. And I'm sure our listeners love your contributions.
That's the second last question, by the way.
Joey, yeah, that's my MO, right, Joey?
I can't wait for the third last question.
Look, and Cutter has alluded to this, Joey, a couple of weeks ago. If things start to go squirrely, things can happen in the locker room. And we've already heard a little bit of chirping. I don't think it's anything outrageous, but it's some murmuring. Joey, is there enough leadership from what you see on this team to keep players on the straight and narrow?
I think Jameis has that. I don't know beyond that whether there's the element in the locker room to keep people moving in the same direction. I think it matters to Jameis. I think he's accountable. I don't think he's an excuse maker. I think he holds himself responsible. I'm not sure I hear the same tone from the other players, but they do have a leader at quarterback, and I believe that drifts over to the defense. They follow Jameis as well. And I know Jameis doesn't mind putting this on his shoulders, and I think that's what he's trying to do is put it on his shoulders and get it moving in the right direction. I know this is not going to sit well with him. This is not what he envisioned, and his response is going to be to work harder. So we'll see what happens in New Orleans, but I think he realizes the season's at a delicate point, and it's got to get better, and it's got to start with him.
He might have to match spirals with Drew Brees next week, Joe. That's a tall order.
Not an easy task by any means. Anybody that thinks that's easy is crazy. It's always difficult to face Mr. Brees, but that's where the season has brought them, and if they can somehow get out of there with a win with the Jets at home, maybe they can get on a little bit of a roll. That's what they've got to do. They've got to get momentum. Right now, it's going in the absolute wrong direction.
Thanks, Joey. Much appreciated.
Thanks, Ira.